I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by Madison Firefighters Local 311, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and, of course, the operating engineers, Local 139, and Madison Teamsters, Local 695. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation with us. John, what now? What's next?
Well, I can just tell you that the last few days have been the period where Donald Trump, and I guess we have to talk about him for a little bit longer, although he's sort of fading from memory, where Donald Trump has gone from the petulant loser stage to the delusional lame duck stage. I mean, now we're really moving into the cinematic territory here, right? Where you have somebody going down in epic, dramatic ways. And it was probably summed up on Thanksgiving Day, which is a day where if Trump was smart, he probably would have, you know, like had dinner with his family. But instead, I think because Joe Biden on Thanksgiving Eve and on Thanksgiving Day put out really effective, really presidential messages that were poignant and warm and smart and, if you know, just on top of things, that Trump felt he had to do something. And so, of course, if anybody who hasn't seen this, I do recommend it, he had the poor, you know, beleaguered White House staff move a little 30-inch high desk out into the middle of a room, you know, next to a Christmas tree, and put a chair at it, and sat at the desk and did sort of a press conference kind of.
Oh, I have some audio here for you.
Yeah, but I just want to, before you do the audio, I just want to emphasize the visual is perhaps more lingering even than the audio. So as people listen to the audio, they should recognize that you have this pretty big guy, quite big guy, sitting on Thanksgiving at the kids' table.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of Nicolae Ceaușescu at the end of his reign, sitting at a little table like that. Now, the next step isn't going to happen.
It didn't end well.
Didn't go well at all.
All I'll tell you is that Trump, who has always been about presentation, right? He's a reality TV star. He came down that escalator when he announced, you know, love the guy or hate him, he tends to know about presentation. This may be the ultimate example of the extent to which he's losing.
Yeah, it wasn't mic'd properly. The lighting was terrible. Yeah, all right. So here is the epic rant.
States, they did drops where you're going along like this, and then you have a spike that goes up to the ceiling at that. It's disgraceful. We can't let that happen. And I will tell you, in Philadelphia, the Republicans, that State House Republicans, are very, very upset. And it's sort of appropriate because Philadelphia has become very activist. If you look at what's going on, they don't want that to happen to Pennsylvania, to the state of Pennsylvania. And it was, I don't even like to use, it was a rigged election.
But sir, just to be clear, if the Electoral College votes for Joe Biden, will you concede?
Well, if they do, they made a mistake, because this election was a fraud. Just so you understand, this election was a fraud. I mean, they have Biden beating Obama on Obama's vote in areas that mattered in terms of the election, in swing states. And yet he's losing to Obama all over the place. But he's beating Obama in swing states, which are the states that mattered for purposes of the election. So, no, I can't say that at all. I think it's a possibility. They're trying to look between you people. Don't talk to me that way.
Sorry,
you're just a lightweight. Don't talk to me that way. Don't talk to, I'm the president of the United States. Don't ever talk to the president that way. All right, I'm going to go with another question. Go ahead.
So if the Electoral College does elect President-elect Joe Biden, are you not going to leave this building?
Just so you, certainly I will. Certainly I will. And you know that. But I think that there will be a lot of things happening between now and the 20th of January. A lot of things.
Yes.
When someone has to say, I'm the president of the United States, don't talk to me that way.
I mean, it's the end of it, right?
Can we use John Nichols' favorite word here? Tragic.
Tragic. Yeah. But isn't tragic is still, tragic's like what we reserve for Scott Walker.
Oh.
This is at a more epic level, I would argue. I mean, it's you know, kind of like, again, it's Greek tragedies and, you know, like mafia movies and things like that. It's where people are, you know, kind of like falling apart at the end and just disheveled. And
well, it may as well have been the Greek alphabet because I didn't understand a thing that he was talking about. That what was he talking about?
Well, my favorite thing, which is, you know, of course, this is you and I.
I thought you'd like my line about the Greek alphabet.
For you and I, both who are election junkies, right? We're geeks. We look at the numbers and stuff like that.
Right up there with Craig Gilbert.
Oh, Craig Gilbert. He probably takes a day off, not us. No. We're up there with, like, David Wasserman over at... He was tweeting away on Thanksgiving. But here's the interesting thing, where he said, oh, well, you know, Biden only went up in the battleground states, right, in the places where he needed to go up, like this fantasy that they've somehow produced votes. Wrong. This week, Connecticut certified, and they had a 6.4% margin swing against Trump from 2016. Indiana certified, they had a 3%, 3.1%, I think it was, you know, margin swing against Trump. All of these states, all over the country. This isn't something that just happened in battleground states. In Democratic states and Republican states, Joe Biden ran significantly, measurably better than Hillary Clinton did. You know, he's now way over 80 million votes. He's won 25 states and the District of Columbia. This isn't you know, an up for grabs thing.
Well,
and yet Trump continues to peddle that notion. And he peddles it with such confidence that you have to say he is either ignorant or lying. There's not a middle ground. And in either case...
I think he vacillates. I honestly think, from what I understand from people, you know, that talk to his staff, reporters, he vacillates from being cogent at times where he admits defeat and, you know, understands he's not going to be the president anymore, to going back into rampages, and some of it has to be whoever talked to him last.
Oh, I'm sure that.
When Rudy gets on the phone. So, but here's what I've noticed, and I can tell because I have more interaction with conservatives on Facebook and everything. They're not exactly rallying to this. You know, if there was serious election fraud, or even a hint of it, or something tangible,
anything,
you would see serious protests all over the country. There's nothing.
Nope. And you know why? I'll tell you why. Because the people knew this was going to be a tough election. Not because of Trump. It may have been a little bit because of Trump casting shade on it throughout the campaign. But they also knew because of the complexity of the COVID moment and because it was, you know, it was understood going in that you were going to have a big boost in turnout. You were going to have to put on more staff, you know, get better machinery. They did. Not everybody, not every place is perfect. But boy, you know, this was a well-run election. And the end result is that, you know, it worked, even though there are a lot of close results. And that's an important thing to understand, that these are close results. But they weren't, it's not just in one state. It's not like in 2000 where you did have a way to focus on Florida, one state, and then you burrow in, you find every nuance, every, you know, Chad and butterfly ballot and everything like that. This is in five states, even perhaps six when you look at, you know, Minnesota you throw in, which was supposed to be competitive but wasn't. And so the fact is he lost. He lost big. He lost everywhere that he needed. And so you can't, even if there was something, which there isn't, but even if there was, you can't go out there and find three Floridas, right? Even, you know, Dick Cheney and Karl Rove recognized that.
All right, so this happened on Sunday, and shortly after this, the GSA, you know, turned over the keys.
And here's the reason why. The president has had an opportunity to access the courts. And I said to you, you know, George, starting at 2:30 a.m. on Wednesday morning, if you've got the evidence of fraud, present it. And what's happened here is, quite frankly, the conduct of the president's legal team has been a national embarrassment. Sidney Powell accusing Governor Brian Kemp of a crime on television, yet being unwilling to go on TV and defend and lay out the evidence that she supposedly has. This is outrageous conduct by any lawyer. And notice, George, they won't do it inside the courtroom. They allege fraud outside the courtroom, but when they go inside the courtroom, they don't plead fraud and they don't argue fraud. This is what I was concerned about at 2:30 in the morning on Wednesday night. Listen, I've been a supporter of the president's. I voted for him twice. But elections have consequences, and we cannot continue to act as if something happened here that didn't happen. You have an obligation to present the evidence. The evidence has not been presented, and you must conclude, as Tucker Carlson even concluded the other night, that if you're unwilling to come forward and present the evidence, it must mean the evidence doesn't exist. That's what I was concerned about starting on election night, and I remain concerned today. I think it's wrong. I think what you've heard, lots of Republicans starting to say this. I said it on election night, and I hope more say it going forward, because the country is what has to matter the most. As much as I'm a strong Republican and I love my party, it's the country that has to come first.
Oh, yeah. He's one of the most courageous men in the world. Put the country first.
He gets his points this time.
For this time, right.
And amazingly, so does Rush Limbaugh. Because although Limbaugh is, you know, erratic on this, almost as erratic as Trump, even Limbaugh basically called out Giuliani and said, you hold a press conference, you ought to bring some facts.
Well, this is not stopping this Sidney Powell from filing another lawsuit against Georgia, even though the Trump team tried to separate themselves from her. She's filed another case. Can you imagine concocting a scenario where voting machines were rigged by Hugo Chavez? Okay.
The late.
Yeah. I think Maduro got thrown in there as well. And Brian Kemp from Georgia.
They're working together. You know, Sly? Can't you see? It's a state. It's the deep state. Well, no, the thing is, you thought, in your naivete and your innocence, you thought Trump was the biggest grifter. He has now encountered a bigger grifter. Because, of course, that's what this fired lawyer is doing. She is looking for a way to raise money, right? And so, by the way, is Rudy Giuliani.
And she's Michael Flynn's attorney as well.
Oh, yeah, which has had a big win, you know. But these are grifters. And the fascinating thing is that Trump's a grifter. I mean, the Wisconsin recount is an example of that. That's a huge grift, right? They're forcing people to work on, you know, today. You and I are talking on Black Friday. They're forcing people to work on, you know, holiday weekends and stuff like that to count ballots.
Do you know who Dawn Martin is?
She's
a Democratic activist in Milwaukee. She always volunteers. And that woman, who's in her 70s, she's been at that recount every day helping George Christensen organize everything. You know, the sacrifices people are making for this grift.
My neighbor, Tina, she's working it. It's a job, not a high paying job, but a decent. You know, she's working, doing the work. She's worked the polls and everything like that. And she, you know, had yesterday off, but she had to be back in there first thing on, you know, or yesterday being Thanksgiving, first thing on Friday morning. And so the point is, this Wisconsin grift, right, is being done so Trump can keep raising money, keep saying, and they're even starting to say it, we think Wisconsin may be the biggest problem in the country, right? Well, it's not, and it won't be, and yet he's trying to make money off it. So is Sidney Powell. She's trying to make money off this and trying to, you know, keep people sending poor, you know, grandmothers in Texas send her money. And so is Rudy Giuliani. You know, Rudy Giuliani's doing, like, podcasts about this, and you can, you know, like, click to download my podcast about, you know, where the voter fraud is, which has no more evidence than anything else.
All right, let me just give you some instructions on something to do when we're done talking today.
Okay.
Watch Keith Olbermann. You know, he does these daily YouTube, yeah. Right? Check out the one he does on Giuliani. It's his most recent one. Okay. And the story he tells, you will pee your pants laughing.
I will not, but I've laughed really hard.
Okay.
I'll tell you a Giuliani story quick. Everybody's like, wow, what happened to Giuliani?
He's always been a grifter.
Well, but more than that, right? He's always been a racist grifter. And this is an important thing to understand. David Dinkins, one of the more honorable men
who just passed away.
Just passed away, 93, former mayor of New York. I was around back in 89. I was out in New York when Dinkins beat Giuliani. And in that 89 race, you know, they had future races that went other ways, but in that 89 race when Dinkins won to become the first black mayor of New York, the stuff Giuliani did in that race, I mean, it was vicious and you know, incredibly racially charged. There's no question that Giuliani has been the same player all the way through. And it's interesting to note that after that 89 race, when Dinkins won, Giuliani tried to suggest that it might have been stolen from him. So he's been doing the exact same stuff for more than...
Well, and he's been out to get Joe Biden ever since Joe Biden famously said in, what was it, was the 2008 race,
when
he was still running, that with Giuliani, all you have to do, you know, is count on him saying 9/11, adding a noun and a verb.
Yep.
And I don't think Rudy ever really forgot that one because it stuck.
And remember, that was at a time when Giuliani was running for president.
Yeah, right.
And was getting, at some point, remember, Giuliani actually got some serious traction as a candidate. And it all fell apart. He ended up, I think he finished slightly behind Tommy Thompson that year. But the Biden in 2008, I think one of the reasons that ultimately Barack Obama, who sat on those debate stages with Biden, why Barack Obama chose Biden was because Biden was so effective in taking down the Republicans. And first and foremost, Rudy Giuliani.
John Nichols with us. We'll be back. Slysoffice.com.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
The attorneys at Gingras, Thompson, and Walks have had the honor of receiving numerous awards for their work both in and outside the courtroom. But just as important as receiving accolades for being skilled attorneys, it's equally important to give back to the community in which they live and work. If you want a personal attorney that can help you in so many different areas, they've got them. They're in Eau Claire, Madison, Milwaukee, and Waukesha. They're easy to reach. GTWLawyers.com. That's GTWLawyers.com. We're back at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works, also Jeff's Guitar Clinic. So think about this. Put this in some perspective. We were just talking about Rudolph Giuliani and Joe Biden. Rudolph Giuliani and Donald Trump tried to use the full force of the American State Department, Defense Department, and the White House to destroy Joe Biden. It led to Donald Trump's impeachment, but there's no doubt they tried to use that, right? Now they've thrown everything in the world at him. Joe Biden has survived a brain aneurysm. He's had to bury two of his children and a wife. And yet here he is in one of the most consequential moments in American history. What is all that say about this guy? Is he going to be Harry Truman? Is he going to be Franklin Roosevelt? Or is he going to be a caretaker president?
He's not going to be a caretaker. We're getting the evidence of that now, and it's important, and it's worth charting and keeping conscious of. I'll tell you the measures of him not being a caretaker. He's not bringing in showy appointments to key positions. He's bringing in hyper-competent people who can actually restore agencies like the Department of Treasury, like the State Department, and putting, you know, top people into important positions. They do tend to be older, but they tend to be people who are really good at what they do. Bringing John Kerry into the White House in a full-time position, that's more important, I think, than some people are going to recognize initially. So his cabinet picks, even if I don't agree with everything about him, are really smart picks. And then the second thing is...
All right, well, let's back up there just a minute. These are not household names. They're household names in Washington.
Yeah.
But I had not heard of any of them. Some would say, and I read a piece, I can't remember whether it was Politico or Washington Post, that, you know, Joe Biden knows he's not an Ivy League intellect like Barack Obama. He knows his shortcomings, and he likes to surround himself with smart people. He's fiercely loyal to them, but he's basically bringing his team in. He's basically taking his staff, at least with the national security part of this, minus the defense secretary, and surrounding himself with people that he really knows.
And trusts.
And trusts, yes.
Yeah. And he's putting them in charge of great big agencies with a lot of power, right? And he's asking them to do big things. The new, designated ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, is one of the more respected people in diplomacy for 30 years, right? Tony Blinken, who's, by the way, somebody I don't always agree with, but has been around the State Department in fundamental ways for a very long time. And you just go down the line. Janet Yellen, who I actually think is a pretty good pick for Treasury, is one of the more, A, she's very competent. B, she's actually pretty nuanced and thoughtful in her ideas about how to do economic policy in a way that doesn't just reward billionaires. And so these are people who can really seize agencies, take charge of them, do big and important things. And he's doing all that. At the same time, I just want to emphasize, he's also communicating in really effective ways. Look at what's happened over the last week or so, since it was clear that Biden had won. There's no question it's done. He has doled out information in a very steady way that kind of keeps him at the front of the news cycles on a regular basis. Trump can do a crazy thing, but it's Biden who's really kind of guiding the news cycle. And around Thanksgiving, his statements, both his statement on the day before Thanksgiving and on Thanksgiving Day, in which he and Joe Biden appeared, were smart, effective, not just holiday things. They were talking to the nation about fundamental duties, responsibilities, possibilities. They had depth. I mean, this is a guy who I think is starting to frame out a presidency that is, you know, you were saying, is it going to be like, you know, Roosevelt, Harry Truman, someone else? It is going to be a combination. But it's got an interesting dynamic, and you'll appreciate this. I think you're starting to see a mix of Roosevelt, Eisenhower, and Johnson. And those are three presidents, very different, radically different presidents in a lot of ways. But at the core of them, they understood the power of the presidency and they used it.
I brought the name Truman up because of it sure appears as though they really kind of want to mend the NATO alliance.
Yeah, they do. They do. Now, Truman had his ups and downs as a president. I mean, he got a really good biography, so everybody, it's like John Adams, everybody thinks he was great at what he did. He was good at a lot of what he did. He's a great communicator in many ways. But, again, I'm going to go with that Roosevelt, Eisenhower, Johnson model. And the reason I'm going with it is it's that you have some of the ambitions of Roosevelt, but without the Congress. That's a complexity. You have the steadiness of Eisenhower, And then you have, with Johnson, somebody who came out of the Senate and knew how to work with a Congress that might not always agree with them, but knew how to finesse things and do some stuff. If indeed I'm right, as hard as this is going to be, Biden's actually got a chance to be a pretty significant president. And unfortunately, much of that will be decided by the Georgia runoffs on January 5th.
I can't remember the last time where Republicans only held the White House for 4 years. So there's got to be a lot of Obama people that are going to be going back into government just because so close. You know, there was 12 years between Carter and Clinton, right? And Carter and Clinton were not close.
No, and I think also that Carter didn't put as much of an imprint on things.
The federal judiciary. There he did.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
Better in many ways than his successors. But I think that here you're right, because you have Obama's vice president coming in 4 years after Obama. But you also have something else, too.
Is Grover Cleveland the last time this has happened? Where the Republicans only held the White House for 4 years?
Let me think. I'd have to think for... Yeah, no, without a doubt. Yeah. Because there haven't been that many 4 year presidents in the 20th century. The 20th century was an era of presidents who had multiple terms, and they're often succeeded by their vice president.
All right, let me play a clip of Lester Holt with Joe Biden.
Moment. This team behind me.
You announced some key members of your cabinet today, a very experienced group. A very diverse group. Clearly, you're trying to send a message. Can you articulate what that message is?
America's back. We're at the head of the table once again. I've spoken with over 20 world leaders, and they all are literally really pleased and somewhat excited. America's going to reassert its role in the world and be a coalition builder.
This lineup, those you've selected so far, a lot of familiar faces. Among them. What do you say to those who are wondering if you're trying to create a third Obama term?
This is not a third Obama term, because we face a totally different world than we faced in the Obama-Biden administration. President Trump has changed the landscape. It's become America first, which meant America alone. We find ourselves in a position where our alliances are being frayed. It's a totally different... That's why I found people who join the administration in key points that represent the spectrum of the American people as well as the spectrum of the Democratic Party.
Have you considered, for the sake of national unity, selecting or nominating a Republican, someone who voted for President Trump?
Yes, and we still have a lot more appointments to make. I want this country to be united. The purpose of our administration is once again reunited. We can't keep this virulent political dialogue going. It has to end.
Should we expect an announcement?
No.
Not ever or not soon?
No, not soon.
Okay. What about former rivals from your own party, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren? Have you talked to them about cabinet positions?
Well, I've talked to them. Look, as I said, we already have significant representation among progressives in our administration, but there's nothing really off the table. But one thing is really critical. Taking someone out of the Senate, taking someone out of the House, particularly a person of consequence, is a really difficult decision that have to be made. I have a very ambitious, very progressive agenda, and it's going to take really strong leaders in the House and Senate to get it done.
The head of the GSA yesterday.
All right. So your thoughts on that answer, especially regarding Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, well, I don't think Elizabeth Warren's going to go in for a couple of reasons. Number one, you don't have quite the road in Massachusetts. Charlie Baker has not given an indication that he would appoint a caretaker or a more permanent fixture, who would be a Democrat, or at least would caucus with a Democrat. So that's complex there. Also, she didn't get the Treasury gig, which is the one that frankly, a lot of people wanted her to get. With Bernie Sanders over at Labor, that is a little bit more of a possibility, because Phil Scott, the governor of Vermont, also a Republican, has indicated that he would appoint a caretaker who would caucus with the Democrats.
Boy, I'd want that one in writing.
Yeah, I realize. But Phil Scott's actually, you know, Phil Scott didn't, you know, he endorsed Bill Weld for president, so he's not exactly a Trump player. But I would just tell you that I think there's a little more chance at Sanders. But if you listen to the nuance of what Biden was saying there, he's saying, he wasn't just saying, I don't want to take somebody out of the Senate because of my tipped balance. He was saying, we need strong leadership there. And I think that was the tell that he is leaning against Sanders as well. Not that he's rejecting the concept, because that's a real, I think that's an open discussion. But just that notion, we need strong leadership.
I love the fault lines the labor secretary has been falling under of, you know, building trades versus some of the other unions. And I think it's, I think Marty Walsh, who's the Boston mayor, is being unfairly attacked. Marty Walsh is a really progressive guy.
He's been a great mayor.
But he does have a relationship with the building trades. And I tell you, during the whole fight over Act 10, that was Phil Neuenfeld's great skill. He kept the building trades on board.
Well, not only that, Marty Walsh is, Marty Walsh has been, you're right, a pretty good mayor. But he's also got a tough pro-labor stance that extends way beyond the trades, right? It's across the board.
Well, I remember you and I were saying we were hoping he'd win. He was running against a typical garden variety Democrat. Like, this guy was the street fighter for workers.
Oh, yeah, back in, I think it was 2013, where you had a number of these mayors coming up. Not all of them have turned out well, by the way, but Marty Walsh has turned out pretty well, and yeah, he's got critics on the ground, and I think he'd love to get out of Boston and come down and do the Labor Department. He's a very, very confident choice. You know, but one thing also to understand is that I sympathize with Sanders for this, because I like the idea of raising the profile of the Labor Department even more. But if Marty Walsh comes in there, he doesn't just come in as a pro-labor guy, as a strong pro-labor guy. He also comes in as somebody who's run a big city. Right, he's managed a lot of people doing a lot of stuff in difficult times, and the Labor Department is a huge department. I think it's got, I hope I'm right about this, roughly 15,000, 17,000 employees. It has about a $50 billion budget, I think. Again, I'm pulling this out of my head, but it's big, and it's got all sorts of responsibilities, everything from doing statistics to overseeing safety initiatives to, groundwork on how to organize and collectively bargain.
Because I will tell you, the Democrats' problems, it would go a long way in helping in, small town America, mid-sized cities like Stevens Point and Superior, to have a more aggressive posture on labor, because if we're ever going to bring those places back to where they were, and Stevens Point and Superior still went for Democrats, but not by the margins they should. Organize labor is the key to bringing back that vote.
And let me offer you one addition.
Am I wrong?
No. Organizing labor is cool, but it's key everywhere. It's key in Milwaukee.
I agree. It's everywhere.
It's key across the country, because, we have a massive working class in this country, multiracial, multiethnic. And it's been let down. And so having a labor department that's on the side of labor would matter. But this is also one of the reasons why I have sympathized with the Bernie Sanders prospect, because I think Bernie Sanders would actually physically go and join picket lines and go and, endorse organizing drives. And I think Marty Walsh would be sympathetic to it. I think others would be sympathetic. But Sanders, that's the one reason why I think Sanders in that position would be exciting.
Well, he certainly would.
He likes to join a picket line.
All right, one more clip before we go today. This is Tucker Carlson.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. Happy Tuesday. So here's a question for you. What does Joe Biden believe? What are his plans for our country? Well, it's hard to comprehend this, but the truth is we still don't know the answers to those most basic questions. We don't. Somehow, Joe Biden made it through an entire presidential campaign, most of a year, without telling us. A partisan press corps let him get away with it. That may be the single most dishonest thing that has ever happened in American politics. If you're looking for election rigging, there you go. Tens of millions of people voted for a candidate who wasn't real. They voted for a ghost with a whitened smile. They had no idea who this man was. They had no idea who they were voting for or what he might do if he got elected. But at the urging of the media, they voted for him anyway. And so now, the rest of us get to find out what they voted for. Joe Biden has started to assemble his cabinet. So we're going to go by his choices to let us know what we can expect. And what is emerging so far, as of tonight, looks a lot like the HR department at a large left-wing multinational. Heaps of woke authoritarian social policy mixed with a corporatist economic agenda. So the rest of us will get stern lectures about our moral failings, those never end, while a small group of highly connected people will get even richer. Does that sound familiar to you? If Jeff Bezos and the Google guys took over the entire U.S. government, and effectively they have, this is what it would look like.
Tucker Carlson, you want his full name? Just did you know his real name? Oh, God, I don't have it here now. He's got like seven names, and one of his middle names is McNear. He went to a private school in Switzerland. Okay. He got kicked out of, but he went there. He grew up overlooking in La Jolla, California, overlooking tennis courts and a country club.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, and isn't he like heir to like frozen fish or something, like food or something like that? You know, I mean, he is. I know he's got Swanson is one of his names.
Oh, yes, like Swanson. So yes, Swanson. It's Tucker Swanson McNear Carlson.
Yeah, and I think that Swanson is for, like, you know, remember when you got...
Oh, yeah. Like Salisbury steak. Mm-hmm.
TV steak, but they also did a turkey.
Yeah, sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right, eliminating. My mother relied on that to feed me, I think, through my childhood. So I'm partially responsible for Tucker because I helped to build his wealth. Look, a couple things there that are really interesting. Number one, Tucker Carlson's potentially picking a runner for president in 2024.
Oh.
You can hear that.
Right? Man of the people.
Yeah, well, man of the people, but we've had this before, right? You know, so just be conscious of it. But that, and you can see this interesting populist mode. It's a right-wing European populist kind of thing that is, you know, very critical of diversity, multicultural society, at the same time with a populist or attempt at a populist economics. It's not really populist because it doesn't really want to strengthen unions.
This guy used to wear a bow tie and was on MSNBC.
And taken down by Jon Stewart, the most effective TV takedown, I think, in modern American history. It was back in, I think it would have been around 2000.
Oh, that's when he was on CNN, yeah.
Yeah, when he was doing that crossbar. And Jon Stewart comes on, and they literally start saying, you know, you're hurting people. And he described the lies and the whole thing. And Tucker Carlson got all upset. He says, come on, I thought you were supposed to be funny. And Jon Stewart goes, there's nothing funny about what you do. It's damaging.
I know. I remember the moment.
It was so good. But the bottom line on this is that Tucker Carlson is a hypocrite, a cynic, all of that. People should listen to what he's saying. Take it in and understand the danger of what he's saying. This is somebody positioning for future either media or politics. And the danger of what he's saying is that there is an element of concern as regards the economics of this administration. And this administration has to get the economics right.
Okay.
Getting the economics right means you have to take care of the working class.
So now, my friend Leo Girard, former president of the Steelworkers, loves Joe Biden. And yet I know he disagreed with some of his trade votes. But Joe Biden came, you know, when Biden was part of the Obama administration, he had to go along with what President Obama did. But Joe Biden was senator for a state that, going back to colonial times, the Court of Chancery, where business disputes were settled, became, you know, Delaware became the state where businesses incorporate. They don't have a sales tax, you know. So he represented Delaware. Do you think that Joe Biden, the president, will be a little... By the way, I bet you didn't think you'd hear about the Court of Chancery today.
Loving that operation.
Back to the colonial times. By the way, Washington posted a great extended story about what Delaware is. I highly suggest people read it. Is Joe Biden going to be a different president than he was senator.
There's some evidence of it, but we still, I don't think all the evidence is in yet. The evidence of it is the selection of Yellen to be the Secretary of the Treasury. Yellen's not perfect, but she is definitely not part of the Delaware circle, right? And he's also got Jared Bernstein, who's quite good in clearly advising, I think he'll be someplace in a key role in the White House. Again, a very, very good guy on economics. So there's some evidence that Biden is listening beyond the Delaware types. But you should be concerned because the Delaware types have tended to be...
Ted Kaufman.
Very corporate.
Yeah.
And they're this awful combination of very corporate and deficit hawks. They tend to be corporate on the side of very big, very strong corporations that just want the federal government to have low taxes and, you know, balanced budgets and things like that. And they're bad players.
Well, you can be a deficit. Russ Feingold was a deficit hawk.
You know what I'm saying.
No, I understand that. There's a differentiation there. Right.
Feingold was pay-go. He was like, you know, we got to get the money and then we do it.
Right.
They don't want to do big things. These folks are...
Right.
Corporations can do a lot of those things.
All right, one final thing here, and it must be said, the one thing I read in the piece about Delaware, I'm a little concerned. I know that Joe Biden is kind of a fitness freak, but he actually likes food famous from Delaware. Listen to this disgusting sandwich. It's called Bobby Sub. It's basically Thanksgiving on a roll. It's turkey, cranberry sauce, and stuffing all put on a sandwich.
So they have that in Philadelphia, too, so it's not unheard of.
Well, Delaware is a suburb of Philadelphia. Yeah. By the way, stuffing is the most disgusting food ever.
I kind of disagree if it's got the right spices. Let's not lose our track. Let's not lose our theme here. Here's what I'm going to tell you. Joe Biden's a politician, first and foremost. I doubt that he really likes those sandwiches. That's my drift. Right? I got a few doubts about whether Scott Walker was always eating that homemade sandwich.
Oh, the ham sandwich? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, I think politicians try to use food as a way to suggest they are a certain something. My bottom line is, and I think this is a saving grace, is that Joe Biden is a politician. He will say some things that make people feel good or maybe like him. But at the bottom of it, at the core of the discussion, if he's a politician, if he's serious about it, he wants to win in 2022, get a better Congress. He wants to either keep the office in 2024 or hand it off probably to Kamala Harris. And if he's serious about that, his job is to get the economics right, to make sure that he, you know, by 2022, as tough as COVID has been, as tough as all this other stuff has been, that people have got jobs and that things are functioning. And that they are functioning in a way where they have real power in those.
Well, and it's on all of our jobs to keep the pressure on in that area. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to Sly's office.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.